Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
And better than ever.
All right, are we on? Is the show start?
No.
God damn it, Joe.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Tim's here, Purnell's here, and Chris is here. How's everyone doing?
Great. I definitely haven't already been podcasting for 2 hours tonight. Let's go.
How did that go?
What other podcast do you do?
I still do. So I never bring it up on here. my X-Strike Studios history, but the podcast we started in 2006, Triple Radio, is still going, and actually has been going better this year than it has in like the past several, because we've actually been getting an episode out every month.
Oh, wow.
So is that the show that you're on when you do the annual, like, yearly game wrap up and stuff?
Yes, that you have been on, Purnell.
Exactly. But that's why I was like, oh, it must be that. But like, I honestly believe that you were doing that only at that time of year for some reason, because I never heard you bring it up otherwise.
You're not wrong. For some years we would, like, you know, do a couple episodes in the spring, and then it's just like, you know, schedules would just make it difficult, you know, as having children living across different time zones are wont to do. But somehow this year we didn't get an episode in September, but we have done up to this point like 10 episodes this year, so we're doing pretty well.
Huh? So then that poses the question for me then. I know you're like, I don't usually bring up on the show, but now the curiosity's hitting. So I know during the annual you do the yearly wrap-up, but what is your general topic when you do average episodes?
Oh, we're just shooting the shit on games we've played and movies we've watched. At the end of the day, it's like, you know, I do the show with, you know, my friends, Dave and Weiss, we have known each other since we were like 3 or 4 years old. So it's part doing a podcast and part me just catching up with my friends every month, you know. We just happen to stream it live on Twitch and then put the recording out and kind of just talk about the games and stuff. And
that's how it should. I like that, honestly.
Yeah.
Talking about the games I actually play instead of everybody talking about games that haven't come out yet. Not referring to this show, because Joe might be like, what the fuck? But I'm talking about, like, I try to get friends to talk about, like, just what they're playing generally, because I want to hear what my friends are playing, you know. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's always like, this game's coming out. This game's coming out in 3 months. Do you hear this press release? Like, I don't give a fuck. I'm playing so many games. Mm-hmm. I don't care about what's coming. I'm playing what's here. Tell me what you're playing now.
Yeah, but when we first started, it was like a weekly, like, oh, this is what we've been playing. Let's talk about some news. You know, sort of deal. I think, but you know, now it's just kind of a laid back chat between buddies. And we don't cover news unless something of note comes up in the conversation. Then, of course, we do the end of the year thing, which has been an annual tradition since 06. I think it was 06. Was it 08?
It's a good tradition.
I think it was 08, actually. It was 08 when we started, because Gears of War 2 was my first game of the year on there. So, and we were just talking about 2008 on the show. So, yeah, but
someone
you can
Assassin's
actually...
Assassin's Creed just turned 10, and it makes my back hurt, because The Shield turned 10, which makes my back hurt.
No, Assassin's Creed is older than 10 years old.
I thought someone said it just turned 10. Or one.
It was a PS2 franchise, wasn't it?
I think it turned 15.
Maybe that's
what it is. My memory might be off, but didn't that originate on the PS2, or was PS3 and Xbox 360?
It was a 360 game. It later came to PS3. It was like one of the reasons why I got a 360, actually. It was just like Assassin's Creed, Mass Effect, Bioshock, and I believe it was an 07 game was Assassin's Creed. So yeah, at 15 years, that makes sense. But yeah, if you do want to listen to me talk about that shit and not just do reviews on here, that you can go follow X-Drake Studios on Facebook or Twitter or me at Accubizer. Technically, it gets posted on fatgatsby.com, which was our podcast site that we started after X-Drake died. But that is mostly died. Like, we used to have a bunch of podcasts going on there. You can still listen to the archive of stuff on there. There was like some, there was a comic book podcast. There was a retro game podcast. And now there's an episode of Triple Radio every month or so. But I got to go through and kind of clean out some of the old shit. There was an Overwatch podcast that me and Mahoney did for a while when we were really into Overwatch. And yeah,
I've always wanted to do like game specific podcasts. I feel they'll just run their course after so many episodes. Just like, all right, what else do you say?
Yeah, well, eventually we started, you know, we gravitated away from Overwatch and then we gravitated back, but then we gravitated away again. And, you know, that was, I'm not going to force myself to do nothing but Overwatch for the content. So, you know, hell no, no thank you. But, you know, we were just kind of throwing shit at the wall on there. Yeah. And like whatever we wanted to do, like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it. Let's try it. And at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's just talking with friends about stuff that interests us, you know. Which is the joys in the creation. Yeah, for exactly. The most part. Yeah. That hey, and, somebody might listen.
Reviews, but we're not getting to those.
Oh, man.
What? Did you want to? Are you like eager to dive in? Oh, yeah. You've been talking for 2 hours. You are eager to get the fuck out of here.
I mean, you know, I'm not pushing the issue by any means, but I'm just.
I was lurking for a little during your show. Okay. The whole Bayonetta thing, I think that's a good topic of discussion. What Parnell and Chris, what are your thoughts on the Bayonetta situation?
Well, I feel like the problem that exists as a whole remains to be an actual problem, being pay to the actual profession. However, it made me kind of frustrated in a sense where the person was upset about something. She came out publicly addressing it, but she buried the lead in the process to make her situation look worse than it actually was. And then when some quote-unquote investigative journalism revealed, you know, that the number she provided only came after she already got denied from the amount she actually wanted, but they had offered her more, and that the entire situation was not as she portrayed it, you know, I was like, okay, it's still a problem, but the way you addressed it, now I just don't even care in your particular situation. Like, I just want you to go away now and go about your business, which is even sadder because when you lay it on the table, I mean, things generally heal over time, but at least in the present sense, her VA career is kind of done because no one's going to want to hire with that whole thing under their belt.
Well, so, she broke NDA.
Yeah, she broke NDA. She screwed up on the actual details of said NDA. It's just, I can't imagine a studio being like, oh, yeah, you're that Bayonetta chick. Yeah, we'll hire you. No, it's going to be more like, well, yeah, we'll get back to you on that. And then that means never. So, yeah. And it may, and the thing about it, like, it also kind of just sparked the general sense as a whole of like, there's a sense of like people wanting to get to, not so much get under people's skin for the sake of like getting, you know, noticed or advertised for, but it just kind of stunk of that too. Like, rather than just come out and be honest, you did that thing that people like to do where it's like, how do I make my situation seem as dire as possible so people will just side with me blindly because they'll jump on the first thing they hear rather than dig into it. But I've rambled plenty. Chris hasn't even given his take on it yet. So,
I'm kind of like no thoughts, head empty about it because I haven't played Bayonetta. I've only done the cursory looking at Twitter at the thing, and you know, we just can't believe Twitter anymore. And yeah, I don't know. It's very it's hard to care.
In some respects, it's almost like guarding your sanity sometimes too. We're just like, I just can't care.
it's that's the kind of thing. Like, maybe if I was more invested in Bayonetta or anything like that. I know VA people. Like, that's the problem with VA in general, though, is that, like, a lot of, there's a lot of drama in that whole career path. Like, I remember, like, when the internet was trying to get onto like certain cartoon voice characters for like expressing some opinions and like kind of airing some grievances. And then that it was like almost a similar situation in that sense. So it's kind of like, you know, one has to think like, well, what do you gain if everybody believes you and something changes? Like, what is the goal? What do you want to change? Do you just want to get paid more? It's like,
no,
you know,
Purnell, I know you are big into The Simpsons. Didn't The Simpsons run into issues a few times over the years with voice actors and salary and shit like that?
Yeah, it's come up over the years, though I didn't follow it too closely because in my mind it was like The Simpsons voice actors are already getting paid like gobs of cash for what they do. But by that same token, though,
anyone else in the role?
Oh, exactly.
You're gonna have to eventually.
Well, but I mean, this is true. But at the same time,
after so long,
it really depends because even already, I mean, the show's going on longer than anybody expected it to. In the sense that I don't know how many people watch it. I don't follow the ratings per se. I mean, I'm going to assume they get enough people watching it that they can continue to release episodes and justify the salaries and whatnot. But
at a certain point, you're just perpetuating that brand, which is more important than anything.
Yeah, because I mean, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, Chris Pratt's going to be around for a long time. So,
Chris Pratt is everyone on The Simpsons.
Yeah. We're all covered, yeah.
But yeah. Like, I
don't have a cow, man.
Like, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if I dug into it and realized that there were maybe scenarios where, like, maybe it turned out Nancy Cartwright was making a fair bit more than Marsha Wallace at the time, rest her soul. And then maybe there was a headbutt in regards to that. But for the most part, that franchise, aside from maybe some of the bit voice actors, it just kind of seemed like they just hashed their shit out and got it done. But voice acting is an interesting profession in and of itself as far as cost goes, because even though talent is a big deal, and it should be a big deal, overall, I feel like lots of the time it's more so about voice recognition than anything else.
Of my gaping butthole.
Like long-standing properties, for example, just like we were talking about the Bayonetta scenario, people recognize her for who she is. So the voice at the time was probably like, you know, this is great. We know who she is. But at the same time, it wasn't exactly a well-known voice so much as just this is what she sounds like. But there was no star power behind the voice itself. So they could just say, you know, well, she's a voice actress. She's good at this. But, you know, really, if anybody replaced it, would they notice? And what we're already realizing is that the answer was people generally don't. They're just like, yep, I'm good. But if it was maybe something like one of the visual novels that that you know that gets played, where the voice is the majority of the game because they're talking constantly, or if it was like a One Piece game coming out, but instead of the voice of Luffy as you know him, it's some other random person that's doing it just for the game. That's when it's like, you know, no. You got to get the voice that people recognize, and if you don't, there's going to be problems, and that's when you start demanding X amount of dollars to get your work done.
Unless you're Scooby-Doo, which is so funny. Like, I've been kind of like, you know, a friend has had me watch like several of those movies now and stuff. And it's like, it's so funny that like the original voice of Fred is still there, right? It's Frank Welker, who's done like 40,000 like roles. He's every animal you've ever heard in a cartoon. He's like in everything. Anyway, he was the original voice of Fred. And it's like, mm-hmm. He doesn't always voice Fred, but sometimes he's still on the show doing Scooby-Doo's voice, whose original voice actor has passed on, but like that role gets passed around too. And it's just like,
Casey Kasem was doing Shaggy originally, and now I don't know who they got doing him.
Well, Matt different Willard. People. And like, yeah, well, that's for live. But the funny thing is, there is a movie where Billy West was, which, by the way, there's another person who's been very dramatic in the past. Billy West has done Shaggy's voice, and it's indistinguishable. It's, like, pitch perfect. So, sometimes, I don't know, it's like I said, VA in cartoons is really fascinating to me, because it's, like, the same pool of talent that have been doing it since, like, the 70s.
Yeah, it's amazing in that sense, too, like, it makes you wonder how new blood even gets into the pool.
Right. Which is a terrible, like, analogy, but, or a terrible metaphor.
Yeah. Like how that. Come on.
How do we get this new blood into the pool?
It's like, maybe Billy West only did Shaggy in 1998. That's it.
Yeah, for one film. That's crazy. What I'm saying. But I watched that and I was like, oh, it's Billy West. It sounds just like Casey Kasem. And, you know, like, that's the other thing, you know, when Nickelodeon kicked John Kricfalusi off his own show, Ren and Stimpy, they just had Billy West do Ren and Stimpy's voice, whereas, you know, John was Ren's original voice.
Yeah, and then when they brought the show back, he did both voices and it sucked.
The
adult cartoon party, whatever they tried on, is it Spike TV?
It started as like a more adult kind of thing, but I mean before it was Nickelodeon. But anyway, I think it was on MTV at the start, right? And it was like it was a long time ago when they tried to reboot that. I think I was still working at Best Buy. But anyway, yeah, all this to say, man, it was hard for that particular story of Bayonetta 3 to make a blip on my radar. It's more like. Here's the thing of, like, people being like, well, you should never buy Bayonetta 3 because this happened. And now people are, like, kind of going back on it and stuff. Is like, well, you know, should I have bought Bayonetta 3? Should I still buy it? Am I okay here? You know?
Like, I'm more shocked you don't have it already since you own most Switch stuff.
Yeah, but I actually don't. I don't even... It's like a fraction.
There's so much Switch stuff, though. Let's be real.
True. There really is. But yeah, I've never played Bayonetta is the problem, so it's not high on my list. But I grabbed one and two because I knew I wouldn't be able to get it used later because the first one is just a code. So I was like, well, you know.
Well, they released a physical, the first one.
Right. I don't know which one I have.
It was recent, so you have the original, you have the Bayonetta 2 that came with a code for Bayonetta 1.
Yeah, I know, right, rather, because I opened that one so I could get the code. But yeah, just still haven't played it. It's not a series I've paid attention to.
Yeah, well, should we get the reviews?
Bayonetta. About that time.
Stuff we have paid attention to.
Yeah, first game's not on the Switch.
No.
Sorry, guys. First game to talk about tonight is Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, developed by Infinity Ward and about a dozen other studios, published by Activision, released October 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $69.99. Welcome to the new era of Call of Duty. Tim, what is going on in Modern Warfare 2?
Oh, the same stuff that goes on in every Call of Duty game every year. Yeah.
Cool. Buy it or $70.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, there you go. This is modern. To be clear, this is Modern Warfare Roman numeral 2. No, I'm not going to get into this. I see that it's for some reason rated kind of low on Steam, and I'm anxious to find out what's pissed off Steam users about it. Probably some kind of Activision interface that they make you get into, so people are just Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. So I talked a bit about the multiplayer that the beta was a couple weeks ago, and I guess that's kind of the lead thing of Call of Duty these days. Perhaps it always was, but now they're not even trying to hide it. Or I mean, they're just leaning into it, I guess. That is first, campaign second. It's kind of not the full multiplayer release because Warzone 2 isn't out. That doesn't come out for another couple of weeks, but that's free to play. That doesn't really need to factor into your decision at all. It's not part of this package. It's just adjacent to it. The multiplayer is out in full with all the modes and thankfully all the maps, because that was, if there was one thing I was kind of like, about the beta, I was like, I'm tired of seeing this handful of maps over and over again. But now there's... I don't know a lot. I'm sure you can look it up. I couldn't tell you how many modes there are. There's so many. Like I did not count them all up. Consider that the beta was just like a handful. It was clear immediately. Like, oh good, there's more maps in here. There's like one that really. It's interesting that like when you're loading into a multiplayer match, there's like a little cutscene that kind of plays to like set up the conflict, which is interesting. I don't know how long they've been doing that. Again, I just to be clear, I lapsed from Call of Duty a long time ago. I really only played a significant amount of Modern Warfare 1 and 2. I like rented Modern Warfare 3 just to play the campaign. I played a bit of Cold War a couple years ago to back up Cole on a review, and that is it. Like, I've only ever given a shit about Modern Warfare for Call of Duty, really.
Carnage is saying it looks like there's about 16 maps. So
that's I believe that, yeah. And there's some that are bigger than others because there's bigger modes. There's like the, you know, the ground war mode that's like more like Battlefield where there's vehicles. But, you know, just on when you get in there, like all of the modes are and you because it says to the button is just quick play. Like you don't select a mode. You just hit quick play. And by default, like all the different modes are checked off, which includes domination and like capture the flag, and there's a counter strikey like one where you have to protect or capture or rescue hostages, I guess, where if you get shot you're out for the round, though your other teammates can revive you, but you don't just like insta spawn back in. There's like free for all deathmatch in there. There's a like third person one. So you can just kind of select the modes that you like and it will just cue you into those games, which for me, because I'm an old man and I just want to play team deathmatch, meant me turning off all of them except for the one.
I don't want to play with flags, and I don't want to play with balls.
If I want objectives, I'll go to Overwatch 2 and hate myself there. And I will. But yeah, it has those. So yeah. To be clear, this is not like a Call of Duty veteran talking here. This is not someone who has played every single game and plays a ton of the multiplayer every year. This is me coming more or less coming back to the series after a decade, not even playing the Modern Warfare like reboot from like 3 years ago. I didn't even play that. So even though I was quite interested in it, this is me coming all the way back. So, you know, for me going in there, it's like, okay, you know, these things were familiar. You know, it still has that same addictive progression to your weapons and your unlocks for your character and getting kill streaks. And it's still fun just like doing that stuff, except now you can actually like jump and climb up stuff and mantle over things. And there's just like more movements, combat options in there that just like make it more fun. And I still had fun with it. It is still fun to me. But I guess mostly what I'll talk about in this review, that is still good. I know that's the most important part of the game for some people, and that still seems rock solid and good and a great experience. But the, you know, the campaign is something that I care more about. I did play it to completion because it was available to play for beta for if you bought in like starting like a week ago Friday, which is an interesting thing. Like, here, please play through our goddamn campaign for a week before we unlock the multiplayer and you never touch it again, you animals.
Yeah, normally they do it the other way around. It's like, here's the multiplayer where you could have the campaign in a week, and this time it's like, mm-hmm. Here, play the story because no one cares about it.
We know what you people are going to do. You just, like, here, get in there and actually play this thing that we spent all this goddamn time on that we have to have in here, but you don't care about. Actually play. I think that's an interesting way to do it. And also, there are unlocks for the multiplayer that are attached to it. Like, nothing too crazy. There's like a couple of operators. You get a good amount of like double XP tokens you can use from there. So it's probably going to be worthwhile for somebody just to to lower themselves to play through this campaign, you know, at some point or another, you know, if they haven't already. But yeah, so this is Modern Warfare 2, and didn't know too much about what they did with the original remake. I remember them saying that, you know, it was more a reimagining, like a different take, and that it wasn't going to slavishly follow like the campaign of Modern Warfare 1. And this is also that, and that it doesn't follow the campaign of Modern Warfare 2 at all, one bit. There is no Russian level, which shocked me to no end that they didn't have that. Like, I expected that to be the touchstone somewhere in the middle of the campaign, and it was not there. There was no Russian moment there, like, to kind of really set off the story. No, you have, like, you have your Call of Duty group of characters, which is Captain Price and Soap and Ghost and Gaz. and a new guy, Alejandro, who's in the game a lot. He's a Mexican Special Forces guy. You are chasing a WA Al-Qaeda that still abbreviates to AQ, and, you know, some generic Middle Easternish terrorist who has gotten a hold of some missiles and is going to use them for bad ways. And there is a little bit of globe trotting in the game, not much. Like early in the game, you are in some stand-in Middle Easternish country, carrying out some kind of strike to try to find this guy, Hassan, I think his name is. And then it cuts back to like Amsterdam, where Price is, where he's also trying to get information on him. And then eventually the game settles into mostly taking place around the Mexico-US border in northern Mexico, as you're dealing with a lot of the terrorist organizations, like in league with drug cartels. So there's a lot of rootin' tootin' and shooting around northern Mexico and a like city that's under cartel control. It's mostly the kind of what you've come to expect from Call of Duty. I punctuated my reviews last week by mentioning this insane mission where you're like in a helicopter and then dangling out of the helicopter and then hijacking cars in this chase through the mountains, which was a pretty great one. And there's some other highlights too. Like nothing, I mean, they've done so much with these games over the year. It's kind of, I feel probably tough for them to really have a shocking moment like the nuke going off in Call of Duty 1 or Modern Warfare 1 or the No Russian scene in Modern Warfare 2. There's definitely like some big moments and there's some cool gameplay things that end up being attached to them. Like when you're on a cargo ship later on out at sea and like the ship is swaying and like giant cargo containers are sliding across the deck as you're like in a gunfight going from one end of the ship to the other. And that's pretty cool stuff, but it's not like a big punchy moment, like some of those other things. But you know, you do get to get in like an AC-130 like plane at some point and you're just like lighting shit up on the ground and maybe feeling a little questionable about it when they're like, yeah, there's hostiles coming in from the school. And I'm like, do I shoot a missile at the school? Like, I guess I have to blow up this school. It's just like,
is it talking recess about, at least?
I mean, I guess there isn't children there, so that's good. But it's like, you know, they're very, like preceding that, they're very clear on rules of engagement. I'm just like, oh, you know, don't. You know, we can't shoot the buildings until we've confirmed, you know, what's inside. You can't just shoot buildings all willy nilly. You might hurt civilians. And then you're like going through this town, just like fucking lighting everything up. And it's like, okay, guys. And also an early mission when you like go across the US-Mexico border and you're like going through a neighborhood, like through people's houses, and they're like yelling at you to get out of their houses. And you have to press X to de-escalate, which is just pointing your gun at them. It's like, that is not de-escalation,
I guess.
So, I mean, if you were wondering, it still is Call of Duty and is still very ham-fisted with what it thinks, you know, how it deals with problems. You know, this is more definitely like the Michael Bay bombastic military shooter type thing going on. It does have a couple of instances where it tries to do some different things with the gameplay. There's a stage where you're like infiltrating the drug cartel's hideout to try to talk to the person in charge of it, and it like you're at a party and like briefly it's kind of like a little mini Dishonored level where you need to get up to the penthouse and there's like different ways to go about it. There's one where you're going through a prison, like your team is infiltrating a prison and you're using the closed circuit cameras to kind of direct one of your teammates around as you're watching where guards are passing and like jumping from camera to camera and just kind of ordering him what to do, like almost like a real-time tactical thing. There's one where you are by yourself and like the game almost becomes The Last of Us sans the, you know, mushroom zombies, but it's like you're unarmed. You have to like scrounge for materials and craft bombs and stuff like that until you can get up to like actually stabbing a guy with a knife and getting a gun off them. And some of that stuff is cool. And some of that stuff I don't like as much. I also don't like The Last of Us. So you can probably guess which part I didn't like as much. Especially when they bring that back up at the very end of the game. And I'm like, ugh. I don't want it. This is who thought this was a good idea. There is a sniper mission in ghillie suits. They did do that. But yeah, it's a solid campaign. I did feel like a few levels probably went on like one sequence too long. Like they could have wrapped up like a few minutes earlier and just felt like a bit tighter, but it was a decently fun campaign to play through. The story is kind of like, all over the place. I mean, I guess, you know, people talk down to Modern Warfare and Call of Duty stories in general, but I did enjoy the arc of the first trilogy of games, and this was definitely did not feel as solid in what it was doing, and the certain twists were very obvious from the second you meet certain characters. But it was cool, and, you know, I have to say, like, it is unbelievably good looking as a video game. Like, holy shit, this game looks good. Like the water effects, like the vistas that you're going through, it's almost a problem that you're like stuck in gun combat, because like like there's one where you're like escaping through this mountains in Mexico, and I just wanted to stop all the shooting, like just like, guys, time out, I just want to look at like this valley here and see what they made, because it looks amazing. Like there's one where you're swimming like up on some docks in Amsterdam at night, and it's just like, just the way the water ripples, it just looks really cool. Just like the game looks amazing.
It's, and when you have like, you know, 10 studios working on it, you can make it look really, really good.
Yeah, like you cannot deny like the level of polish and craft that goes into a game like this, and it is, you know, top tier as far as video games go. And just like kind of as a romp through an unbelievable looking world where you have fun, you know, doing questionable things with weapons of war. You know, it was pretty satisfying. Like, you know, all right, well, I had no problem pushing myself through to the end. Okay. $70.
$70, $69.99. They also have a vault edition for $100. What are your thoughts on everything?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is gonna, you know, change your mind about Call of Duty. Like the series has so much baggage at this point, like what, almost 20 years into its life. But, you know, if you are someone that wants to recapture the glory days of like 13 years ago, you know, it scratched the itch for me. Like it felt good. It wasn't the best campaign I've played, but it was a lot of fun to play. There was cool stuff that was memorable. The multiplayer has so much more going on into it, and you know, tons of maps and tons of stuff to unlock. It still felt like a good, you know, a great worthwhile shooter, and you know, you're gonna get your money's worth out of it, because it's not gonna get any cheaper, because they never do until maybe some point when it's just on Game Pass at some point
in 4 years or something.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
For someone who's only interested in the campaign, what do you think?
Oh, I mean, it's not, you know, Call of Duty campaigns are infamously not, well, you know, not being long isn't a bad thing. And it's probably 5-6 hours. That just your money to time ratio might not be great at that price point, but you know, like I said, the production values are certainly there, and you can at least, you know, rip through it again on you know, the harder difficulties, which I always enjoy doing back in the day. What? No, you don't like? I always like, I would at least go through
it and then I move on.
Okay, well, I always did normal, and then I went through again on hardened on both of the old ones. I'm not gonna do it on this one just because, you know, there's other things I have to play.
I'm awful at shooters in general, so like I just want to play for the story. That's why I never touched the multiplayer stuff, because I suck. Like I am garbage tier at first person shooters.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I feel pretty good playing these. I'm just like, yeah, I'm hitting it, I'm good at this. All right, now I here's an alternate review from Norog on Steam. Not recommended. Would rather play with my wiener. With wiener misspelled.
Wiener is you.
That'll go on the box. Next game to talk about, Yomiwari Lost in the Dark, developed by Nipponichi Software.
Apparently the game, just hang on, what I'm getting from just kind of scanning over these reviews is apparently it crashes a lot on PC, so be aware. Yeah.
Anything else?
Wow.
And people complaining about console players getting aim assist.
Boo-hoo.
Oh, yeah. This seems like, yeah.
Oh, I hate
these people are complaining about things that are over my head as far as Call of Duty, but hey, I said
online because it's 2022. Shut the fuck
up. Yeah, what are you talking about that? What? Of course it's always on fucking line. What are you doing offline with it on your PC? Do you unplug your cable? What are you talking about? Come on.
People.
Whatever. I don't know. People have different opinions. You heard mine. Moving on.
Next game to talk about, Yomiwari Lost in the Dark, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released October 25th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. A young girl must explore haunted town and search for her missing memories in order to break a curse. She'll have to rely only on her wits, cunning, and a well-placed hiding spot or two to evade the twisted ghosts that wander the streets. Chris, what is going on in Yomiwari Lost in the Dark?
Okay, so Yomiwari. So I got real confused when this game came up, because I was like, wait a minute, I remember this from when I was buying up like all the Nipponichi stuff like at a certain point, because like, you know, NIS America kind of like can't miss with me.
NIS can't miss.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, yeah, they tend to put out like the good stuff that I like. And, but once I like got into it and dug in and stuff, and I realized this is actually the third game in a series called Yomiwari. So this is they basically periodically come out with essentially the same game every time, and they just kind of like call it like it's a different story, but like literally it's reused like monsters and sprites and like assets and things like that. It's very, very you know, like this is like another chapter in kind of like in, I guess, like in this world. I don't know.
That's a sequel.
Hard to it's not a sequel because it's not connected to the other games. You've got Yomiwari Night Alone and Yomiwari Midnight Shadows, and then this is the third game. However, they all have such similar themes. It's always, you know, about young kids, you know, in this case, a little girl, who have to wander around and avoid yokai, you know, Japanese ghosts, in an effort to not get murdered to death while doing, you know, a task that fits the analogy of their horrifying, traumatic life. So, just letting you know, this is a lot of the things that I'm going to say about this game are going to sound unique. Ooh, but in fact, just, and having not played the other two games, I cannot speak to how much of this is directly from the other games, except looking at screenshots, I was like, oh, I remember Googly Eye Monster. Like, that's in this game. So, like, because there's a giant, like, this monster with big googly eyes, and it's creepier than I'm making it sound, but it's like, you know, the size of the street, and it comes at you. And it's in this game and in the other games. So, yeah. Anyways. So, yeah. So, Yomiwari, this one, Lost in the Dark, is about a girl called Yuzu who is tortured at school by the faceless brats that, you know, go to this, you know, seems like one of those schools where everybody wears uniforms and stuff. Oh, yeah, a Japanese school. And it is actually centered in Japan. You can see the writing on the wall, literally, you know, you can see like, you know, Japanese characters and stuff. It's very designed like that. But anyways, these girls are super mean to your character. You get to kind of learn the game by wandering the halls and like being ignored or tortured by like these little brats.
You have two options. Be ignored or be tortured.
Yeah, and actually I'll get to a certain point. Okay, I'm going to reveal one thing about the intro that I thought was a nice touch. And it kind of does set up like a little bit of like this girl's situation. So, after you get like you know, literally like paper wads tossed at you. You get a bucket dumped on you. You get a death threat halfway through walking to your own class.
Wow.
You walk into the class. They've written terrible things on your desk. You have to pick up your own chair, and that's how you learn how to pick up objects. And then they crowd you in and force you to eat a live worm. Now, the game gives you the first dialogue option that you get, and it is to eat or to refuse. Refuse is scratched out, and you can't choose it. So that's the kind of thing this game is like.
Wow.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, you know, this is heavy-handed. Anyways, so the girl, you know, we don't know what her motivation is, but she goes up to the roof of the school and looks up at the night sky, and that was a big mistake, because now she's cursed. Something happens. It cuts up to the sky, which is beautiful, and it shows you the title and everything. Like, it's a gorgeous sky. And then, like, when you come back from the title, it scrolls back down and just her shoes are on the roof. And then she wakes up in this snowy place, not knowing where she is or what's happened, only knowing that there's one person who claims to know her that is trying to help her out, this slightly older girl. And she finds a flashlight, and is told that she is cursed, and she has to remove the curse by regaining her memories of everything that has happened by 6 a.m., or else, probably bad. Yeah, I know. Like, what could be worse than... The worst thing I could think of possibly that could happen at 6 a.m. is just having to go back to that damn school.
Eating worms.
Right, exactly. I'm like, I don't know. Whatever these ghosts have in store for this girl sounds like it's at least quicker than what those girls are going to do to her at the school. Anyways, so after learning the game's mechanics, you learn that basically there are ghosts around. Again, these ghosts are yokai. And yes, when I say yokai, I do mean one of them is a bouncy umbrella. I always like to point out the umbrella guy. Every time there's a yokai. It's been a year since I've been able to talk about umbrella guy. But anyways, so the way to avoid them, there is no combat in this game. You have two choices. You can run, or you can close your eyes and try to walk by them and hope they don't notice you. The closing your eyes mechanic basically closes off all but a small circle around the hero, like if it was like a RPG where you're carrying like a torch, you know, like a Dragon Quest or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sound and vibration starts to like it becomes your heartbeat, and your heartbeat goes faster as you approach danger, and then the danger is represented by flashy kind of red stuff in the darkness, and so you're thing is to avoid it while moving at a glacial pace, and then, you know, once you're far enough away from it, then it dissipates and your heart rate goes back down, and then you know, okay, if I open my eyes, I probably won't get jump scared and killed immediately. Having said, there's a lot of jump scares in this game. It because it's got a cute kind of, you know, hard to describe, like it's a cute art style. It's very you know, your people are chibi. The yokais are always cute. I always find Japanese ghosts to be very cute. In fact, like your map of the world is like clearly made from like torn up cardboard paper and like taped together notebook paper and stuff like that. It's very homemade looking. Like there's a lot of cool like kid aesthetic to this game that is all otherwise horrifying. So the way that they scare you is mostly through sound. They, in fact, when you start a new game, which by the way, you have to do this whenever you turn the game on until you get to your first save point, the game will literally take like 10 splash screens to explain to you how important it is to wear headphones and like, you know, have good sound when you're playing this game, because it's crucial to the gameplay and more importantly to the scaring, which again is of the jump variety. Now I don't normally cotton to like, you know, jump scares, but it's one of those things where it's like, they can't really scare you any other way in this game. And I will say that I did try to experiment. I played the intro twice, once with sound and once without, and the time without sound, it was just like, this is nothing. And then I turned the sound on. I was like, okay, this is creepy. So it really does work to have the sound on in this. But anyways, yeah, so your job is basically the gameplay loop is that you go to your house. Once you safely make your way to your house, that is your base. And as you go out into the ghost-infested streets where you have to basically learn how to dodge these ghosts or run away from them or hide or something, you go to different areas and try to collect objects, which will trigger cutscenes, which will trigger memories. And the more memories you put together, the more the story is told. And as the story is told, more areas of the town become unlocked. Again, represented on a map that is made of torn cardboard paper, which is pretty great. Construction paper, I mean. And that's basically what you do. You know, you just try to unravel the story, try to get your girl to know what to do, and then it all comes together in some way or another.
That actually kind of boggles my mind in a sense, too, because, so spoiler alert, this was Shocktober as of the end of yesterday, and one of the games I was playing around with for that month was the first Yomiuri, because nice. I have all three of them and never played them. And you literally, if I didn't know any better, you pretty much described the game I played.
Exactly. That's,
get to and your that's house, that's your base.
That yeah, that's why I wanted to preface the review by saying this is like going to be very familiar to people who have played the other games. Even I haven't, and just like reading about the other ones, I'm like, okay, so this is just a thing they do. Like, you know, it must have its fans, because this is the third time they've basically copy-pasted the game. And like I said, some of the stuff is literally like ripped from the other games. The graphic style is exactly the same, but the characters are different. The story's a little different. I mean, I like that this one deals with memory loss, because that's a storytelling thing that I particularly appreciate. I've mentioned before that my favorite NIS game is The Longest 5 Minutes, which is about trying to regain your memories. But, you know, that one's told in a more humorous way, I guess. This one, this game is, besides looking really, really pretty, it's very dour. Like, I have yet to hear a soundtrack in it. It's just mostly ambient noise, and then, like, you know, just
dying.
A girl who had a sad beginning is sadly going through trying to dodge ghosts and avoid getting killed so that she can have, I hope, a happy ending.
Now, so the game is sitting at $40. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, so my thoughts are, it's NIS, so they always put stuff on sale. I mean, it's $39 because there's probably a physical version out there. Having said, the first two games are available as a 2-in-1 for the exact same price. So you could literally get two of this game for the same price. It's just they've already come out. So if you are already a fan of the series, then, you know, this is the next game, and, you know, you probably should pick it up, because it is going to be the type of stuff that you're already familiar with, as Purnell, you know, has confirmed. If this is your first foray into the Yomiuri series, I don't see a way to recommend it above just buying the 2-pack that has already come out. So in that sense, I'm going to give it a general try it. But I really, really like everything that's in this game. So,
get involved, you should definitely, in the series in general.
You should definitely play it. Yeah. You should play it or play one of the other two games that are like it. Cause this is unique, horror storytelling, because again, it's doing it without, well, they say there's blood and gore. I haven't seen any yet. I mean, there is blood splatter on the screen as a jump scare if you get killed, but, you know, it's not like you get to see a little girl get, like, eviscerated or something. I mean, I've been on Twitch all of October. I've seen some things, because everybody's streaming these damn horror games that are, like, ultra-realistic and super gory. You know, this game is really cool at what it achieves with essentially, like, little cartoon characters, and I do appreciate that about it, so that's my thought on it.
Cool. All right, next up is The Case of the Golden Idol, developed by Color Gray Games, published by PlayStack, released October 13th on Steam for $17.99. A new kind of detective game that allows you to think and investigate freely, discover clues surrounding 12 strange and gruesome deaths, and build your own theory. Pick your suspect, deduce the motive, unmask the awful truth. Tim, what is going on in The Case of the Golden Idol?
All right, so this game attracted my attention to request a review, because I saw one person invoke the words Obra Dinn when referencing this game, and that game, Return of the Obra Dinn, is one of my favorite games that I've played in recent years, if not all time. And I was like, okay, if this has anything, any kind of similarity to Obra Dinn, I am Obra in.
Oh, Christ.
I shouldn't be allowed to talk.
No. What's your verdict?
So, yeah. No, you should definitely buy this game. So, this game, it follows the eponymous Golden Idol through a series of different scenes, scenarios, where something tragic is befalling someone. So you're presented, this is like a 2D point and click format game where you are given a scene, which they will increase in size and complexity as you move forward. But the first scene of the game is like, there is a man pushing another man off of a cliff, on, ooh, you know, overlooking like a body of water behind you with an island. And your job there is like, you have to figure out the identities of the people involved based on clicking around. So when you start up the game, it will ask you whether you want points of interest, like objects of interest, to be highlighted with a little flashy star on the screen, or whether you just want to do the pixel hunt sort of way and just click around. The game recommends that you do not pixel hunt, but if you are a maniac, you can do that. So you'll see like a little flashy star and you can click on it and it might show you like, okay, this is what is on this. This is what the person is carrying on them. So they might have like some money, they might have a weapon, they might have a note, and then you click on the note and you can read over the note and that may give you some clues. But as you're going through and clicking around on things, you will pick up basically keywords, which could be people's names. And all of these words will pile up in a bank on the bottom of the screen, and the game does tell you like how many keywords there are in a scene, so you will know if you are missing something and you can go back and click around. And like the little star icons, they start off yellow, and if you've basically if you've clicked on everything and you've kind of found all the keywords in read every clue in a certain thing, it will turn red, so you'll know what you've done before. It's very user friendly in that fashion. So you will collect these words, and then you go from investigation mode, where you're looking at the scene and clicking around, to thinking mode. And at this point, it will have a portrait, generally, of all the characters. And you have to try to say, okay, this character is this person, this one is this person. And there will be the characters in one pane. There will be the pane on the left will kind of be a sentence, like a fill in the blank sentence where you need to fill in what happened in the scene. And then on the right, there will be something else that kind of varies from level to level. So you take the words that you've accrued in the bank and you fill them in using like the clues and the information that you found throughout the level, just kind of deducing one piece after another. Like, okay, well, this guy has a letter in his pocket addressed to him, so obviously this is him. This is that person. And sometimes you can do some process of elimination stuff, though they will throw in like extra names and extra words that don't mean anything. And so you'll fill in kind of what you think is what, and the game will tell you whether this is all wrong, or it'll tell you if you're close, it'll say there are two or less things incorrect in this pane, or it'll just tell you all, it'll go green once you have it all locked in. And once it's all locked in, it then removes those words from the bucket at the bottom, and then you can just pull them from the person's name. And it's cool. It's really satisfying. So you're following the story, like they find this golden idol on the island and then bring it back to the mainland. You're kind of following the path of this mysterious idol, which seems to have some kind of supernatural powers to it. And you will go from scene to scene as just like horrible things are happening and being perpetrated in different murderers. And you're going through each scene, just clicking around, figuring out what's going on, the relationships of the characters. Like, one of my favorite scenes is a dinner party. So you're in this big mansion. So you have to figure out, you know, all the people attending the party, like who their names are. You have to figure out the names of like the servants that are around. The like extra third pain thing on that is like you need to figure out where everyone was sitting at dinner through various clues through the level. You need to figure out what rooms the servants stay in. And then you have to figure out this long sentence about like, well, this is why this person wanted this person murdered and this happened, but this and this, that, and the other thing. And it's nice because like the every clue, like you're never in my experience, like lost in this game. There's always some things that are easy to find out, and like filling out, you know, the first base thing, like who is every person in the scene, that will lead you to the next breadcrumb, which will be like, okay, well, this is, I know this is where, you know, these people had to be sitting in this place, and this place at the dinner table. And you can figure that piece out until you're down to like the last few details of the actual, you know, story of what happened in the scene. And then you're just kind of puzzling out the last few things. And then, you know, the game is like, okay, yeah, this is what happened here. This is how it went down. And you got it. Move on to the next scene. And yeah, it's really cool and really satisfying. And so far it has been very playable. There is a hint system. If you start clicking on it, it will do the game will do its best to, you know, push you away, be like, hey, you make sure you're, you know, reading everything, make sure you're going back and looking at your clues. You know, you don't want to use hints for this game. You can figure it out. It kind of gives you some encouragement. And I did do that once. And then I went back and I'm like, okay, yeah, there has to be something I'm missing about this. And I went back over my clues. And sure enough, there was like a code buried in the level that like I not buried, but a code in the level that I hadn't deciphered yet. And then once I got that, then I was able to figure everything else out from there. And I didn't need help. So it's not something that's like crushingly difficult that you're really going to struggle with trying to figure out. I feel like the progression of logic in each level is very good and easy to follow. Even, you know, sometimes I'm not like a freaking genius here flying through levels. There's moments where I got to stop and think and retrace my steps through the clues and kind of reread things and figure out, you know, this, that, and or whatever. But yeah, it is... I'm not going to say it's as good as Oberdin, but it definitely scratches that itch in a very satisfying way.
Nice. Well, it is $17.99. What are your thoughts on that price tag?
I think it is well worth a purchase. And furthermore, I've been playing it on my Steam Deck. It is good to go on the Steam Deck. I've just been using... I think it's actually certifiable Steam Deck compatible at this point. When I first started playing it, it wasn't. But, you know, it is a mouse interface. But, you know, I was just using the touchpad on the Steam Deck mostly to...
How was that, by the way, with you? Like, in your experience with that game? Because I had to do that for the first time with Sunday Gold, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did you feel about it?
It felt totally fine. So I was able to move the cursor around with the, like the right hand, like kind of trackpad thing and just push in on it to click. And like, there's moments where you kind of need to drag and drop, like you need to drag and drop the words into the blanks. The left analog stick would also move the mouse. So when it was just too much of a stretch to drag it that far, I would just hold down on the click and then use the stick to move it the rest of the way. It felt totally fine to me. Like I the cursor moves at a smooth rate. I think it could translate to consoles pretty decently, even just kind of dragging the mouse around. But yeah, on the Steam Deck, it felt great. Felt fine.
Nice. There's a soundtrack available for $5 on Steam. Is it worth grabbing that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice pleasant. It's you know, it's an ambient thing. But yeah, I'm never gonna. Well, no, there was times when I will not recommend a soundtrack, but it's a good one.
But like Yomo Ari, Chris, did you recommend the soundtrack in that one?
I mean, if you like,
available too.
Yeah, like, the collector's like edition has a soundtrack CD for Yomo Ari. So I don't know what that's the hell's on it.
There must just be music I haven't run into yet. Then so that's, you know,
Moan Sound 3.
Yeah,
and that was true.
Maybe it's four. Like inspired by. No, I'll go back and listen to it. I'll give a report on the music. If there is actually music, I'll go check it out.
Sounds good. Tim, that is it for you.
Yeah,
you're gonna go. Yes. You're gonna go rest now.
Yeah, it's time to rest. It was a wild Halloween, and I've been pretty tired all day. But you know, work calls tomorrow, so I must bid you all adieu. Some
energy with that spirit bomb energy you masked up the over and over.
Yeah.
The
whole day. Oh my God, that kid got so much fucking candy. Holy shit, it is insane. We went around more than we have in the past. I mean, the weather was nice for that. And he did get a bonus full size from a fellow nerd who liked his costume. Like, as he was walking away, called him back. He's like, "Hey, Goku, come here," and dropped a full size Kit Kat in the bag.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, he got like 4 or 5 full size last night, which is pretty solid. That's
gotta
pretty great in my opinion.
Got to play the nerd taste.
Yeah, and I have to. It was just a fun night. There was like lots of people kind of like hanging out at the end of their driveways, like with a fire going, or just like under like a little tent, like with a table set up, having a party and giving out candy as people were walking by. Like there was like a half dozen houses like that. There was a guy just like around the block from me, and perfectly positioned at like the end of the street, like on the cross. Like he had two bloody sheets thrown out the quotes, like pulled across his driveway, like with a fire going, blasting metal music and menacing children with a chainsaw. It was fantastic. It was great.
Nice.
Yeah, I put up a video on my book of him pulling the ripcord and people running and screaming.
That's Halloween.
And you could hear the music like blasting up the street. It was so good. It was a lot of fun. It was a great night. And
wowzers.
Gonna go to bed, and I'll catch y'all next week to talk about some skateboarding raccoons or some shit.
Cool beans. Have a good one.
Good night.
Just makes a comment like that and disappears. Skateboarding raccoons.
Oh, you'll be here. You'll find out.
I was gonna say that was so absurd that I knew that was like had to be literally true.
Yes, that is that is indeed what he's gonna talk about next week. Shout out to Lego Lindsay for dropping some biddies in chat. Thank you so much for dropping the biddies there. I can't do math, but it
also
adds up
shout
to
out
like,
to that name for being new.
Indeed, it is good to see somebody new in chat. Hope you enjoy your stay and stick around, and we got to move on. We got so many more games to talk about. It's been an hour and we got through 3.
Oof,
you wordy motherfuckers. Next game to talk about: Paper Cut Mansion, developed by Space Lizard Studio, published by Thunderful, released October 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $19.99. Coming soon to Switch and PS4 and PS5. In this papercraft roguelite, explore mysterious mansion floor by floor, solve puzzles, battle enemies, and complete quests as you unlock new abilities to aid you on each run as you solve the mystery behind the Paper Cut Mansion. Purnell, what is Paper
Cut Mansion? Drop it, bitch! So, Paper Cut Mansion, you are a man who finds his way inside of the mansion. He pulls up. He gets out of his car, he walks in, and he's trapped, apparently. Which kind of
you don't go to mansions.
Especially the ones made of paper. Oh boy. But it's interesting how this game plays, because the idea is that you show up at this place by way of watching the game unfold, and once you walk in, they immediately just kind of cast you into the gameplay loop with the guy saying you're looking for evidence of something. Like, you know, I mean, I assume he has memory loss or something, but you're looking for evidence. And the way this works is that you have to explore this mansion by going floor to floor, like you kind of mentioned in the description. But this is where things get a little strange. So there are multiple floors to the mansion, but when you explore, they kind of start you off with like talking to a person who says, "Hey, I'm trapped here. You're trapped here." And it kind of tries to set the stage for you, but then it kind of just hits you with some really weird stuff that they don't quite explain. Being that even though you're on a floor of the mansion, there are actually 3 versions or 3 various dimensions that the floor can be explored in. And depending on the dimension you're in, that determines what your actions can be. So what that means is there are 3. There's the limbic system, which is an environment where when you go in, so when you're in it, you're constantly losing, like, going, like, losing health to Frostbite, and you can only heal it by being near an NPC. And while you're here, you're able to explore, walk around the house to find objects on the ground, like, I don't know, evidence, the so-called evidence, or the occasional item request that someone might be asking you for, like an NPC you stumble across. And I've never had the Frostbite death occur, so I don't know what happens when you die from Frostbite. I assume you just die. Then there's the neocortex, which is the main area I assume you try to walk around in. And while you're here, you can investigate different objects. And when you investigate an object, it will kind of bring up this like paper diorama looking thing, object. And you can spin it around with the thumbstick and try to find like something attached to like money or like, I don't know, these tubes that do things. They don't tell you what they do. They just do it when you use them. I don't know.
What?
I mean, it sounds corny, but yes, that's it. It's just these two tubes I've come across, two different tubes, but there's no description. There's no like inventory that tells you what the things do. So I just use it in two fireballs, spin around, like, okay, I'm gonna fireball tubes, whatever. And I just move on from there. Every once in a while, you might explore an object in this environment, and like a jump scare sort of thing will come out. Like, say, a hand with a knife will try to kind of scare you. And if it engages you, you're like one of the three meters will fill up on you. And if it maxes out, you'll die of a heart attack. Sometimes a ghost will spawn when you explore an object. And if the ghost spawns, you have to run away from it until it disappears. I've never been caught by the ghost, but I assume that if it catches you, you die of a heart attack. I did come across an NPC to help with the ghost as well, which I'll talk about in a second. Because there's still one more environment to discuss, and that is the reptilian cortex. Right off the bat, I have no idea why these places have these names, so don't even ask. But the reptilian cortex, you suddenly get a gun, and monsters appear, and you have to shoot them and kill them. I don't know why they're here, but they are. Sometimes you'll break a crystal, and when you break a crystal, more enemies will appear, and you gotta kill them, and you're like, yay! And to my knowledge, that's the only real purpose of the reptilian cortex. You fight monsters there. Sometimes you might get a request from an NPC to kill something, which means go to the reptilian cortex to do it.
Hey, kids.
So, through all these things, you can come across money. Certain NPCs will sell you objects that can help you, such as medicine that will provide you with a variety of different like buffs, like Vampirism, or like critical hit damage increases, or instant heal, or what have you. You might come across a lawyer who you can use the money on to buy new cards. Cards make up the abilities you get in the game, such as like throwing sticky bombs, or having a flame drone, or getting an item that increases your stats. But there are four stats in the game, and those stats pretty much involve like different things you can do, like how much damage you do, or like how smart you are, because certain challenges involve you having to know, you know, basically be able to meet that that requirement. Like, is your wit high enough to, I don't know, open a treasure chest? If it's not, you can't, that sort of thing. And otherwise, other than that, the other NPCs might be just like doing things like, hey, do this, go find some bottled water for me, or go find this food magazine. There's no real context behind it. They're just people you come across who immediately just are asking you stuff, and you just do it. I don't know why. The nature of the roguelike, they just got to come up with stuff to throw into a loop. So that ends up being how that goes. Generally, with each floor, the final task of the floor is to solve a few puzzles here and there, such as like a lock puzzle or whatever, to find a talking door. The talking door will give you a request. Fulfill the request for the talking door. Walk through the door. A headless thing will talk to you. That's like, in some cases, the headless thing, but it's just like a floor guardian. The floor guardian will give you a request. Fulfill the request. And it opens the hatch, you go down, and then the game will have a weird little story that tells you more about the characters, like background, and by way of song, and you'll do it all over again. If you die, though, you go back outside of the mansion, you can equip items based off of the items you bought, the cards you've already found on previous runs, and then you go back in and try again. Previous NPC progress remains, but you still got to deal with the intro discussion every time you enter and every time you transition between floors. You have to listen to that same narrative all over again with no way to skip it. It makes me sad as I'm about to say this, because when you mentioned, hey, Perner, here's a set of games I want you can try to review, I saw this and the aesthetics really drew me. I was actually really intrigued about playing this game. And initially, even though I was a little confused about what the heck with these three, the neocortex, the limbics, what? Even with that, I was like, you know, I'm intrigued. But I like searching the different objects to find items. I like the whole paper display and all that. But then you keep searching paper objects over and over again. Nothing changes. The ghost appears. Oh, trying to run away from the ghost. And you just get used to that. And overall, one of the most important elements to a roguelike is that it has to maintain your interest. It has to keep the loop feeling fresh and exciting. You have to feel like you're engaged. You want to keep repeating this over and over again until you finally get it right. But with this game, it quickly fizzles out. Like, you just kind of find yourself going, you know, I don't care if he ever gets out of this house. Whatever. What is he going to do? Or hang out with that drunk who wants you to find his wallet, but you can't find his wallet because the game doesn't give you a map. You can't even determine what rooms you've been in already. And there's no way for it to tell, because there's like that's worth mentioning too. There's a green moth that flies around, and if you go in a room that needs to be searched, the moth will perch itself saying, "Search this room. There's something here to find." But if you're in the wrong version of the house, you might not be able to search, which means, well, why the hell is the moth even here? And in some cases, I'm trying to find something. The moth does not perch, but there's something in the room anyway. So it's like, what the hell is the moth doing? I don't know. Being a jerk, that's what. but it's like, for as much as I want, oh my God, my neighbor is really excited. I thought she was getting murdered for a second.
Jesus.
Well, I say that because I usually text her or call her if I feel like I'm concerned that something's up. But I'm like, I don't even want to be that guy. Like, are you okay? Oh, no, it's just sports. But yeah, back to the review. So,
the Phillies are up like 7-0. That's why they're going crazy.
That's what it is. Okay, thank you for that. Because I'm like, what the hell is going on? I don't have cable. But yeah, in the end, it's just like, as much as I wanted to like this game, as much as I wanted to feel like this is a game I can recommend to the masses, it's got a fresh look, it feels original, I just can't walk away from this with a request for recommendation. Like, it's not hitting for me. It just doesn't click.
$20. It needs an official verdict.
Unfortunately, I'm going to go with a deny it. Though, with that said, for what it's worth, I do like this paper aesthetic. I do like what has been done with it visually. More can be done with this. It just needs to be put into a game that's engaging.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I thought this one looked really, really good. So
I agree. Like, I was geeked for this thing. Yeah. I was like, ooh.
Oh, well, moving
fucking
on.
Yeah.
Root Beer, thank you so much for gifting the 1 month sub to Dark Mika. She absolutely does not deserve it. Next.
She's going to come on here in a minute. She's going to cut you.
She will. She'll just jump in chat and be like, fuck you, Joe, and leave. Next game is Arkanoid Eternal Battle, developed by Pasta Games, published by Microids, released October 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. For the first time ever, players will be able to compete against each other, offering an online experience thanks to the Eternal Battle mode, the main new feature of the game, bringing the arcade experience to a whole new level. This Battle Royale mode features the possibility to compete among 25 players online. Chris, what is Arkanoid Eternal Battle?
Oh boy, Arkanoid Eternal Battle. So yeah, this is developed by Microid, and I should mention that they are the developer of Garfield Kart.
No, they are the publisher. Racing. The developer is Pasta Games.
Well, I saw them listed as the developer, but nope. Anyway. Okay. Well, from the publisher of Garfield Kart Furious Racing and Garfield Lasagna Party.
Yes.
Comes this fascinating remake of Arkanoid, which is one of the core video games that I think most people kind of know. It is the classic, you know, you have a paddle on the bottom of the screen, you move it around and bounce a ball up towards blocks on the top of the screen that you have to bust in order to proceed. This is like I said, Taito's flagship kind of like, you know, puzzle action, I guess, kind of games or whatever. I love it. It's one of my favorite flavors of like classic arcade games. And I played, you know, a few of them for sure. So yeah, this one basically kind of does the thing that, you know, a lot of we've seen it with a lot of Taito games, you know, like the Space Invaders DX and whatnot, where they have basically modernized it, made it look like it was made of lasers, included a retro mode, and this one comes with, as they say, a Battle Royale Eternal Battle mode, as well as a 2-4 player local versus mode, which is pretty cool. If I had four friends, that would have been really nice to try out. So, yeah, let's just go into the, like, the different sections. I don't need to describe the gameplay anymore. There's some good here, and there's some, like, weird here. So I'm going to go ahead and get the one that I think is disappointing out of the way first, and that is retro. The retro mode, so a lot of retro arcade game takes on games, especially compilations, you know, things like that. They just kind of, they do this thing where they'll just straight up present you the original game, or they'll do things like, you know, put a fake arcade cab in front of you, and, like, they might curl the screen to, like, make it look like it's a CRT monitor. They might, you know, do something like that, and, like, kind of as an option, so that you can be like, oh, hey, check this out, to, you know, your easily impressed friends who maybe, you know, don't play that many video games and haven't seen this, like, 1,000 times. This game has that. It has the arcade cab look, like a photo of an arcade cab, and then a curly screen where they give you, they present you kind of a warped version of the game. And they even include, like, crowd noises being played on an infinite loop, and a short one, too. And here's the thing, that's the only way you get to play retro mode. There is no other options. If you pause, it just asks if you want to quit. That's all there is. That is the entire 1986 quote-unquote retro experience, is a version of Arkanoid that is just emulated to look like what someone imagined an arcade cab in 1986 looked
fall
and sounded
into the abyss,
like.
And
interestingly enough, too, no, like, CRT effects on the screen. And the other thing is that Arkanoid was originally played with a twisty controller, and there's nothing like that on the Switch, not that I know of. So it's not an authentic experience either way. So why do they force the perspective and the, you know, everything else on it? And they didn't even include scan lines. At this point, I was like, at least they could have forced scan lines. Okay, so that's the only complaint I have about the game. Let's get to the good stuff. They have Neo, which continues, quote-unquote, the quote-unquote story of Arkanoid, where you have to defeat Doe, which is, I guess, a giant Easter Island head that moves through space and does something. It's the same thing that we're used to with Arkanoid. It's just got a few more, you know, a few more power-ups than what we're used to, but it does have the classics, the multi-ball, the, that, you know, split your ball into three, and then you can clear out, you know, that many more blocks. And then they have, like, you know, the laser, which lets you shoot the balls as well. But in this one, you know, like I said, it's all about the patterns, and they have, you know, all these brand new patterns. They have new power-ups, and they have interesting things like the ability to skip a stage if a black hole appears and you just throw your paddle into it. So, like, stuff like that. Apart from that, it's just the same thing as usual.
Arcade version have warps in it too?
Oh, maybe,
like,
it did, actually.
The side of the stage opened up and you would just go through it and it'd be like, all right, you're done.
You know what? Yeah, that now that you mention it, that is actually, I think, a classic move. Well, either way, like I said, they modernized it by making it look like lasers. So, and, you know, kind of forcing this bloom lighting and stuff. And again, none of this is optional. This is just how it is presented. There's, you know, there are options for, like, changing, like, the sound and stuff and controller sensitivity, which is good. You can also adjust the rumble, but, you know, like, that's it. That's all you get. So anyway, that's Neo. It's basically the single player experience. It is one player. You play through clever stages, you know, of course, where they make funny pictures with, like, the blocks and stuff like that eventually, you know, refer to other Taito things, which is a thing that Taito definitely does. And then, yeah, it's pretty good. I really enjoy that one. That's exactly what I would expect from a modern take on Arkanoid. And then there's Versus, which, again, is the same as Neo, but it gives you up to 4 players local, which is kind of cool. Again, can't really... you can add AI to it, right? So, you know, you can play it. And yeah, like I said, you just set your parameters, how many rounds you like, you know, all the game fields appear on the screen, and then everybody plays until there is a winner. And then there is Eternal Battle, which is the Battle Royale. Now, this one, I actually
meat and potatoes thought, of the game. That is the,
it is
the big selling point.
Now, here's the thing, though, because I knew this was so important, you know, normally I don't bother with the multiplayer aspect of a game that I review. I just refuse. Sometimes I even turn down the game if it's got only multiplayer. So this one I tried. I started up like 6 or 7 online matches, and I have played against a total of 1 human being. Shout outs to Tig. Wherever you are out there, you did best me handily. Here's the cool thing, though. If the game cannot find 25 human players to play against you, they just fill it in with AI. You still you gain levels, which unlocks new skins that you can use across all the modes. And you know, it just kind of it lets you play around with, like, you know, that ranking system. There's online leaderboards and everything like that. But yeah, they basically just give you AI players if there are no human players. So you are always guaranteed a nice online match, even if it's just against, you know, computers against your lonely ass. Now, I'm hoping that this changes as the game, you know, is less new.
I think that's going to be the biggest problem with this game, is whether or not it's going to build an online community, which is what the game needs. And I honestly think the price tag is going to hurt it.
Yeah, I think so too, because like I said, the, you know, all said and done, the Battle Royale aspect is pretty good, but I mean, there's already Battle Royale games on the Switch and they're free. Or, you know, with online, but you need online for this too. So, I will say though that the Battle Royale is the best feature. It basically puts all of the, you know, all the gameplay screens, it kind of just shows them like they're a hand of cards, right? So if you're in like first place, then like the, like you could see 3 other players playing in real time, just kind of off the screen a little bit. And as you get destroyed, you lose points. If you don't clear the blocks by the time everybody's level shifts, then you basically lose some points for each block that's still in play. But there's, you know, like I said, all kinds of bonus chances and things like that. You can really multiply your score. You know, it really does feel like, you know, it's anybody's game. It's not just if you're pretty good at Arkanoid, you're always going to win. I myself, though, have never risen past 6th place, but, you know, that's, I said I love the game. I didn't say I was good at it, but,
I got, first place a few times, but I didn't win, because the way it ends up is once you get to the final 4, you're all playing on the same giant board against a giant dough head.
Okay. And
3 players will eventually get eliminated, and then the final person gets set amount of time to go against Doe and take down his entire life bar. I have not been able to do that. I gotcha. Have failed multiple times. I've gotten close, but I have not been able to take him down.
And gotcha. I'm glad you said that, because I have not even gotten the top 4 yet. Yeah. So that's, you know, that makes sense then. Well, that's cool. Yeah, like I said, I really, really like the Battle Royale version of this. And I'm not, you know, I didn't play Mario 25, whatever, or, you know, 99, Tetris 99, whatever they call it. You know, I don't usually play those kind of games, but I guess the nature of Arkanoid is such that it's kind of like, I kind of appreciate just about anything that's done with it.
You should try, you know, Tetris 99.
I guess I will at some point. I'm middling at Tetris, though. And I get easily annoyed when people can affect my board. But you can't affect other people's boards in this one, too, with colored crystals that I'm sure they tell you what they do. I did not bother looking.
Yeah.
There's a tutorial that you can, that
pops up, yeah, that you can watch, but
you can watch it in the lobby, and I always turn it off. I'm just like, I just want to bounce this ball against nothing.
Well, the game's sitting at $30. What are your thoughts?
Well, at $30, it's like you say, you know, that might drive away some players, and for that reason, it's kind of it's a little bit of a circular thing, right? So it's like the price point is turning away players who would play the Battle Royale, which the Battle Royale would sell more games if more people were playing it. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm guessing because this is Microids that it's going to have like a physical release, and that might be why the higher price.
I don't think this one has a physical.
They published a physical of Mario of Garfield Kart Furious Racing, charged full pop for it too. I almost bought it, but then a friend told me that was, you know, confirmed for me that it was terrible.
No, it looks like it might have a physical. Yeah, it does. All right.
Yeah, I was also like, all the Taito re-releases have physicals. Like, I just bought my third Darius big old collection from from Strictly Limited. So
nice. Yeah, it will have a physical version on Switch, PS4, and PS5. It is digital only on Xbox and PC.
Now I couldn't find any anything about this. Do you know if it's like any kind of cross compatibility or crossplay?
There is crossplay. It is on by default. It is worldwide. Everyone plays together. So if you and I were to start right now, we would probably wind up in the same game.
That makes the fact that I'm actually on my third game since we started the podcast, and I have yet to see another human. That makes that even more sad.
I know. I'm really worried about the game because I think it has a lot of potential, but I think a $30 price tag is just going to scare people away.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say that this one has caveats. If you are looking for the classic Arkanoid experience, then don't bother with this one. It's got retro mode that is super tacked on. The retro mode looks kind of cool. Like, I actually do kind of like the arcade hub, but just on principle, I'm against such things if you can't turn them off.
Yeah.
The single player is good, but not $30 good. This game is a total buy it if you are looking to play online against the really, really good Battle Royale system. And please do so that we have other people to play with. So, apart from that, yeah, it's a try it, or just kind of, you know, a good curio for fans of Arkanoid, which I do count myself among, so.
Cool. All right, next up is Lonesome Village, developed and published by Ogre Pixel, released November 1st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $19.99. Puzzle solving and life sim meet in a cozy, no-combat coyote adventure. Uncover the mysterious, magical past of Lonesome Village and save this town from the hands of evil. Brunel, what is going on in Lonesome Village?
The village takes place in a village.
Shocking. Thank you so much for that.
It takes place in a village that at the onset of the game, has been afflicted by a curse in which every resident of the town has been entrapped within a tower that grows in the center of said village. You, a wandering traveler, shows up at the town, wanders into the tower, and immediately begins rescuing villagers. Rescue is done by way of exploring the tower floor by floor, with each floor having a puzzle hidden on it. Or not hidden, it's pretty much right in your face, but with a puzzle on it. You solve that puzzle and you rescue a villager. The villager thanks you by saying, "Hey, thanks, buddy," and it gives you a heart. I'll explain what hearts are in a second. But at which point you will then proceed to go back to town and visit with them. And they will say, "Hey, by the way, I need help with XYZ. And you can go about trying to help that villager. And if you help the villager further, you'll acquire more hearts. Eventually, you'll get up to 3 hearts per villager, which will then give you a photo with that villager and kind of lock and resolve their quest line. Does that sound familiar? Well, it probably does if you like Animal Crossing, because in Animal Crossing, that's how that game works too. Not the 3 quest thing, but the socialize with villagers until eventually you unlock their photo, because that shows that you kind of max out your friendship meter with them. But unlike with Animal Crossing, this game has a sort of narrative focus to it, in that, yeah, there's villagers, yeah, you're helping them out by fulfilling odds and ends, making furniture for them or delivering goods for them or what have you. The overall goal of the game is to ascend that puzzle tower. Each time you ascend it, you again rescue one villager or multiple villagers with each puzzle you solve. But you also will eventually get to the end of the story, being why is this town cursed? Who is the mysterious individual that you see entering the tower before you go in, etc., etc. Now, while you're helping out people in the town proper, there are a variety of items you can come across that will make things, that will kind of give you the exploration actions that are available to you. You'll get an axe for chopping down trees. You'll get access to a trowel for digging up, like, you know, I guess like X marks the spots, holes in the ground. You'll get a fishing rod for fishing up fish. You'll even get a guitar for playing songs a la Zelda. You know, songs that will actually provide you with actions such as teleportation or making it rain. Make it rain! You can even get some money here and there just from your antics, which you can use at the store to buy different clothing for your character to customize them, or more items you can use to kind of create more items to help villagers and the like. It's the game itself, there's something interesting about this game that I like in that... Well, also it has the day and night cycle too, so you're going to be dealing with like the time of day that an individual visitor is doing X, Y, and Z. So there's something about this game I wanted to mention immediately, which is that I've played multiple Animal Crossing games, and the thing I always had issues with in regards to Animal Crossing is the fact that I would always have this like sense of like meeting villagers, fulfilling odd tasks, hoarding furniture, or whatever, and then I'd eventually just get bored of it. Because there's nothing really happening. It's just walking around town until you're done walking around town or whatever. And you just put the game away, sell it, whatever you do, till the next one comes out, and you do it again. I feel like games like this, even if this, I mean, first of all, I'm going to just put out there, I do like the game. But even though this game is not perfect, and there's like a thing or two I got to mention eventually that I didn't, that gave me problems. I feel like this is the kind of direction that I need for those sorts of life sims. I like when my life sims give me an overall goal, an adventure of sorts. I guess Rune Factory started getting on that train too, which I like, but there's less, you know, cute animals bonding over, you know, delivering cakes to each other or whatever you in those games. But I like what they were attempting with this. I like the idea of them saying, hey, there's an overall premise, an overarching premise here, but also befriending cute animals. One thing I experienced, this is actually going to be a question that kind of goes to you, Joe, directly, because it might help me make sense of this. So you have an inventory full of items. Eventually you run out of space, so you have to go to your trunk in your tent or house to eventually unload items. There's been a time or two where I would go to that chest to start unloading items, and though the game is still running, my controller stops doing anything. And I eventually have had to hard reset the game, as in going to the menu, closing the menu, and then open the game back up from that menu. Have you ever had a game experience where the Xbox controller, while still functional with the interface, stopped functioning with the game itself?
No, that sounds like something fucked up with the game.
Okay, in that case, and that's something I wanted to mention then, because that is definitely a problem that needs to get pointed out, because
yeah, I wonder if that was a known issue that's being addressed. I'm going to check my emails to see if there's anything that mentions it.
I'm not going to use it as a means to straight up say don't buy the game, because as far as I'm concerned, this is the sort of thing that they could easily fix in a patch. I'm not going to make that be the thing that says don't buy this game. But I will say, if you do buy the game, save your game frequently, which is convenient that there's save points all over the freaking place, so it's not hard to do. Just don't go wandering for 2 hours expecting the game fucking to just always do what you want.
I don't see anything in the email about known issues, so this one might be something that they need to check out and address. Also, something we need to address is that Raider Biz just subbed for the 7th month. Thank you so much, Raider Biz. Always good seeing Raider. You here and hanging out.
I know Raider Biz now is now on the old Facebooks. I mean, on the Twitter. So that's good. And at once, yes.
Been subbed ever since this episode started.
25 years ago, when the episode first began.
Raider Biz was there. Oh, there's not too much more to say, but the other thing I want to mention, which I hope it might just be a user error or maybe they'll address it later, but one of the actions you can do is eventually you'll get access to an axe, which you can use to chop down trees. Now, when I first started chopping down trees, I was like, okay, I come up to it, I use the axe, and I'm thinking, okay, I just got to mash X until it's over or what have you. But instead what happens is your character will just slowly chop at the tree 10 times. You can't speed it up. You can't skip it. You have to watch this slow chopping animation take place to get your 10 logs. And I'm just sitting here going, please, God, just stop chopping. Just give me the wood. That sounds horrible. But the point is, I feel as though it would be nice if they let you just skip the whole wood chopping animation. I can imagine a person just playing through the whole game. Even though the game itself isn't particularly long, I still feel like that's a respect for players' time. But to just say, look, I hit the tree once. Maybe let me hit it three times if I don't want to chop the whole tree down. But after the third time, just give me all the freaking wood just so I can move on with my life. So, but all in all, though, it's Bruno, interesting.
What's your review? Sense give me the wood.
Give me that wood. But this game actually ends up being is pretty nice. Like, it's relaxing. It's a relaxing good time. Oh, one other thing that's just kind of stupid, goofy. This is just me naming it. You can tell they had inspiration from Zelda because they had the roll animation that you can do by hitting the run, the roll button. But there's no combat in the game, so you're not dodging anything. you're just rolling roll. Because it's fun. Why it's not? Like, roll! I mean, it's definitely meant to be a speedy roll. One of the NPCs even says you can roll to go faster. Not fast enough to really be like, I'm going to roll everywhere. But, I mean, I guess people did do that in Zelda, too, with that intention. Like, I'm going to roll a lot. But I just wanted to mention that because I was pretty pleased. Like, I could dodge roll, but there's nothing to dodge. What is it, Navi, you jackass? Also worth noting, by the way, for what it is worth, there is money... Christ on a cracker! Navi sucks! We all know it! worth noting for people is the shit. So, I'll just stop until Navi's dead. Yep. So, about the game! So, one thing worth noting is the fact that if you were listening to this and the idea that you have to solve puzzles to scale the tower and you were thinking, oh, that's annoying to me. I don't want to do that. Well, it is worth noting that there are a few things that can help you with the puzzles. Early on, you'll get a magnifying lens that lets you reveal hidden objects. And generally, next to every puzzle, there is a hidden tablet that gives you a clue on how to solve the puzzle. So that's helpful. But in addition to that, you can earn money from doing different tasks and shaking trees and all that. And you can buy tickets that can help you skip puzzles. So I'm not going to sit there and say you can just spam them, but you can get enough to skip a few annoying puzzles here and there. And the puzzles themselves aren't particularly like frustrating. They should all be pretty solvable. So don't let the fear of, oh God, I'm not smart or I'm not really good at puzzles. Don't, first of all, you're smarter than you think. And also don't let that deter you from trying this game out. It's an enjoyable little romp. It's got a lot of heart in it. I just hope the developer is able to fix this weird controller issue I'm experiencing here and there.
Cool. Sounds good.
It is good.
All right. Moving on.
You won't be lonesome.
Moving on. Next game is Ultra Mega Extra Party Challenge, developed by Breakfirst, published by Just for Games, released October 6th on the Switch for $24.99. Over 99 ultra mega extra mini games to enjoy with your friends. Yes, we have much more than 99. Okay, we have 100 ultra mega extra mini games. You might even spot some inspirations from pop culture and meme culture. Will you get all the hidden Easter eggs? Chris, what is going on in Ultra Mega Extra Party Challenge?
Okay, so Ultra Mega Extra Party Challenge. I was hesitant about this one because I have mentioned the lack of friends and the not liking online multiplayer. So, but when I checked this out, I was pleasantly surprised to find that it's very single player friendly game. This is basically We Have WarioWare at Home, the game. So what it is that basically you have a few different modes that you can play. Oh, I accidentally started the game so I could look at it. Now I have to detach my Joy-Cons.
Proud of you.
You're not allowed to use anything but Joy-Cons in this game. You literally can't even advance like the menu if you've got your Pro Controller hooked up.
So this is absolutely not for someone with the Switch Mini.
No, I don't think it would Switch work Lite, with the Switch Mini at all. No, I don't think so. But anyways, yeah, so basically this is a collection of micro mini games. kind of centered around a fitness theme, which is interesting. There's lots of muscle men like flexing and muscle ladies like all throughout the kind of game and stuff. So, like with the Arkanoid, I'm going to just go through the modes basically, because the games themselves, it's very much like something you may recognize. You have 5 seconds, you have a few seconds, to absorb the one sentence of instruction that you're given for a game in which you must do a ridiculous task. And then, if you pass it, then you get to move on. If you fail it, then you don't. And there are exactly 100 of these
of my gaping butthole,
just like they say in the description. So the career mode is the single player version. Now this one actually has a story. You are the weakest gamer in the world, and you get kidnapped by a very by a character that has very like King of All Cosmos energy, called Coach something. He's the coach. He's a muscle man, and he's going to whip you into shape by making you go to an asteroid in outer space called the Steroid, because it's an asteroid shaped like, an Adonis type of bodybuilder dude. So on the Steroid, you have 7 worlds that are each themed after a different muscle or muscle group. And you have to pass one in at least easy mode before you can move on. However, there are 3 modes to start of, easy, medium, hard, where the games have higher requirements and, and such. It's basically, the games have higher requirements. We'll get to the mini games and how they're scored in a minute. But yeah, if you at least pass easy mode, then you can move on to like the next set of games. The games themselves are always in the exact same order. So it's one of those things where it's unlike WarioWare, you don't have to worry about like, oh, what game's coming up next? I gotta react. You're like, okay, so now I've done the cat kind of unrolling a roll of toilet paper, and now I'm going to do a pencil sharpening.
I appreciate that on the Nintendo store page, that's literally the only screenshot is the cat with toilet paper.
Yes, and it is the very first game on the very first level. So it is basically game number one. It's in fact that cat is also in the loading screen too. So that cat is the star of the show practically.
Snuggle.
Although I will say in the list of games, they're alphabetical, so you actually don't get to see the cat first there. But that's okay. We'll get to that too in just a second. So yeah, career mode just kind of takes you through these, difficulty, the difficulty ramps up as you progress and you try to just beat the game and become a strong gamer. Now the thing with the career mode is that, like I said, they give you like 8 to 10 of the mini games. I guess it just depends, 'cause like I said, they're fixed. So you know, it's always going to be the same number. If you fail one, you have to start all of them over. So you really kind of have to learn the games, which is just fine because there is a practice mode where all the games are unlocked, all 100 games just right there for you. And that's also where you can find out that there's actually 5 difficulty modes in this game. There's easy, medium, hard, but then there's ultra and extreme that are available right there in the practice room there. So that's pretty cool. You can just play any one of the games anytime. The one thing about it though is that you have to put up with the load screen every time you want to change a game or even just reload the game. So it's like, it really is for practice. If you like get to a certain spot where you're just like, I don't want to play 7 games so I can have another shot at figuring out this one game. So, that I got in the habit of just immediately going to practice mode and learning how to play the game and then going back and passing it. That's pretty cool. It's career mode. Like I said, it's less random than its competition, but again, it does make up for it in being, totally absurd. And also since it's not tied to Nintendo, it's a little more free with its humor.
Nice.
Which is kind of nice. Yeah. They do parody a lot of things that are in different video games as well as, like I said, meme culture, which this very much has meme culture energy to it. Although I haven't seen any official roll your eyes when you see it kind of like viral memes or anything. It's pretty, it's sincere in its absurdity at least.
Nice.
And then there is Endless Mode, which you basically just play through the games randomly this time in an attempt to get the best score possible. And you can have up to four players on this one. You can play versus and you can play co-op. So that's pretty nice. And like I said, each player is forced to use a single Joy-Con. So if you have two Switches worth of Joy-Cons, you got all four of your players taken care of. And then there is online mode. Online mode, I cannot comment on. You can join, you can find a random game in the public room. You can host a private game with your friends, or you can enter a code to enter a private room. I've tried several times. I have never gotten a single other player to show up in a public room. So I'm not able to. I imagine it's an elimination mode kind of thing. But yeah, I've never been able to find that. But yeah, that's really all there is to it. It is, like I said, it is a game that is pretty, you know, I'd say shamelessly trying to be like another game. But, you know, just kind of an alternative to it. And I think they did a pretty good job with it.
Well, it's $25. What do you think?
Well, $25 is a little bit of a tall order, but considering that like the Wii U version of WarioWare is like $150 now, I guess it's a steal. this is definitely one that I would recommend if, like me, you have friends who are actually interested in it and maybe purchasing their own copy of it so that you can actually drop play against them online. Because I was mentioning this to some other people and they were like, "Ooh, that sounds good. We could actually maybe do this." And I was like, "All right, yeah, if you got it, then let me know."
I think it's even on sale for $14.99 right now. So
it is currently the store page,
and if you want to grab it on sale, grab it now. If not, there's a downloadable demo. So give it a try.
Yeah, and you know, don't spend too long in that practice mode because the whole point of these games is that you're not supposed to be that good at them.
Yeah,
but you know. If you are playing single player mode and that's all that's available to you, then yeah, there's enough to you know, munch on here, but you know, it'll get old eventually, but then it's a party game and they're not supposed to be enduring works of, you know, art or anything like that.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on, next game.
Drop it, bitch! We got
Biddy's drop-in. Trivium Champ, thank you so much for dropping 277 Biddy's across three drops. And then Lego Lindsay drop in, what is that? 405
Biddies. Bits!
Thank you so much, everyone, for all the biddies and all the drops. I love seeing all the little bits go flying across the screen. I am easily entertained. Simple things for simple minds, right?
Exactly.
Drop it, bits!
Every time I go to speak, it's dropping bits. Son of a bitch. Thank you, everyone, for the biddies.
Cut out for a second.
I was going to say, I thought you were dropping frames or something, because that was just instant silence.
Yeah, there's just more biddies coming. There is a hype train that is just starting.
Drop it, my bits!
We're on a great big hype train, man. What
hype
a
train,
sound.
Is it lost?
There is a hype train. Oh, my God. Purnell, do you even know what a hype train is? In Twitch?
No, that's why I started. Nope, not a thing.
So you're just randomly singing hype train songs?
Drop it!
Yeah, but
bitch!
We're on a great big convoy for hype in a train.
Oh my lord. Anyway, all right, we gotta move on. Next game is Robot Tree, developed and polished by Lock Pickle, released October 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $12.49. A physics-based platformer without a jump button. Walk, jump, even though you can't, climb and parkour by directly controlling each leg of a confused baby robot. Go from a glitching toddler to a somersaulting acrobat in the story mode, or share a multi-legged robot with your friends for extra chaos. Purnell, what is going on in Robot Tree?
In my case, lots and lots of failure. But hey, that's the nature of the beast, I guess, in some respects. But so this game, you kind of described it in the offset there. You're a robot who falls into a little pit, and you are then tasked with getting out of the pit, which takes you across a bunch of weird worlds for some freaking reason. And you are quickly given a pair of legs, and you use those legs to get around. You use the left thumbstick to control the left leg, and the right thumbstick to control the right leg. You use those thumbsticks not just to walk with them as you would expect, but also to extend the legs and maneuver and like kind of twist the legs and spin them. And it gets a little dicey. So if you don't have your legs extended, you can just rotate your thumbstick to kind of toss this like a wreck. It's like a square box, and you can just toss it around the ground, like just rolling itself around.
Is this a quap like?
I want to say no, because I feel like quap by design is just a lot of bullshit. I freaking hate quap. I loathe quap.
Quap is a bunch of bullshit when you get down to it, but it's fucking hilarious. Bullshit.
What's quap?
UWOP, look it up. It is a physics runner where you control. There's no way
you don't know what quap is, Chris. You know what quap is.
You control the guy's feet and knees with QWOP, and you have to try to run. And good luck.
Good fucking luck. And the funny thing about that, like, you're.
You should look it up and play it now and tell us how good you can do.
No.
What? You should totally now. You made us talk about it. Now it's only fair. We get to hear you suffer.
Maybe next time. I'm playing the shooter now.
Oh, okay. That's a different suffer. I kid. I like shooters too sometimes. I like them a lot of times.
Robot Callisto Tree. Protocol, come on.
Is going to be fantastic. Oh, sorry. I'm thinking about Callisto Protocol now.
He's literally snapping, folks.
We're 2 hours in. Come on.
Well, even though there may be some quap similarity in the level of just like absolute, you know, ineptitude you're going to face playing this game, I feel as though, unlike with quap, there is a method to the madness here. It's just a matter of you getting used to the controls, because there's something to be said about the fact that I've been playing this game for hours and I still have yet to truly master the mechanics of like how to truly manipulate my robot. With that said, though, every victory I have had has been good. Like, I'm like, yay, I am now swinging on the vines by properly rotating my little robot man. Learning how to jump took me an hour and I'm still not good at it. It's rough, man. It is rough. Eventually you learn how to do things like use your legs to grab onto stuff so you can kind of like swing from vines and climb walls with them. And it's also interesting in the sense that the way they kind of program the leg movement is that while you're walking around, if you say walk left foot, then right foot, then left foot, then right foot, you want to do it one leg at a time. And when you're done, you want to let go of the one leg to move the other. Because once you're done using it, it kind of resets the positioning of it. So you can kind of like, okay, I'm centering myself, start walking further. It's weird to explain, but there's an actual like fluid walking animation that they have in place for this. If you walk correctly, you will be stressed to shit trying to get this right. I'm not even going to mince words with this. I mean, some people might be more coordinated than me, because I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm the most coordinated person out there. But if you kind of aren't the one that's used to this kind of mechanic and like the dexterity of manipulating two different legs and kind of having a momentum going with them, you're going to lose your goddamn mind. And I don't want to sit there and make this sound like I don't like the game or anything like that, because in fact, I've suffered through it. And I say suffer because, again, it is frustrating. It's tough. But I've enjoyed trying. There is a clock. You can turn on like a time challenge mode if you care. But there's no clock in the corner saying, you're really screwing up. You're failing. They don't keep track of your deaths that I know of. So every time I die, it just respawns me. I can try again. And it's a very chill atmosphere, too. So it's very humorous. There's little weebo things that talk to you. And if you come across them, hit like certain hidden ones, they'll go, beam me up, body, whatever body is. And they'll leave you a microchip that's a collectible in the game, along with these little blue crystals, which are also collectibles in the game. It's just, for as frustrating as the mechanics can be, it's a fairly chill experience. And it's one that I think would be a lot of fun. Also, there's a co-op mode, apparently, where each player controls one of the legs. Oh, Jesus. I'm pretty sure someone's going to get murdered doing that.
That's a friendship killer.
It will be a friendship killer. But with that said, I've also played games like Cookie and Cream and Ib and Ob, and know that those kinds of like weird like team-up co-op games have a certain ring to them. Misplosion Man. Like, there's like a certain ring to that just says, hey, it's fun being frustrated with my partner. We'll just get it right eventually. Just keep trying. I think this game has a lot of charm to it. I like it a lot. I just wish I were better at.
Well, it's $12.49, so an odd game has an odd price. What are your thoughts?
I think it's an odd buy. Just know what you're getting into. This is no walk in the park. The best part is that was just me honestly saying walk in the park, but I'll take it. I'll take all of it. Puns, bitch.
Next game to talk about is Mecha-Ritz Steel Rondo, developed by Hey, published by Hanaji Games, released November 3rd on the Switch for $14.99, set in a mechanized world. The story begins with a world-renowned young scientist named Velos. One day she invented Mecha and eradicated humankind with her creation, recreating a metallic world filled with mechas. Pilot humanity's last hope, a mecha imbued with human will, through the onslaught of enemy waves, yet as the tides of battles turn and the world reveals itself, perhaps there's more than what meets the eye. Chris, what is going on in Mecha-Ritz Steel Rondo?
Well, the game, like that description, is basically word salad in terms of like describing, you know, how it describes itself and things like that. Which should make sense because Hanaji Games, the at least the publisher of it, are the same folks who brought us Desertopia and Ranger Dog and Barrage Fantasia. I've now covered every game that I've still, like, I'm 4 for 4 on covering these games in terms of that. So this is a vertical shmup. Shmup, of course, is short for shoot 'em up, which means you are one lone ship against an array of bullets. The particular genre of this particular shmup is a vertically shooting bullet hell. You know, you're basically dodging waves upon waves of big pink bullets. Actually, you can change the color of the bullets, which is kind of cool. And, you know, it's done vertical style in the sense that, like, it's very vertical. Like, basically, it's like a phone in portrait mode. Like, it's
one third of the screen.
So, you know, if you are playing this on a portable mode, then, you know, if you have, like, a flip grip, this is a perfect candidate for it. Or if you're like me and you have a little TV that you can just stand up on its end, you could do that, too, and play it in Tate mode, which is, you know, basically putting your... like I said, your TV on the side and playing it tall mode.
Yeah, I saw you doing that with your TV, and that's pretty awesome. I don't have a flip grip anymore, so one of my buddies 3D printed a blue grippy Switch clip, basically, cool. And it's really cool.
You might as well, as hard as those things can be to get. You know, did you sell yours for like $300 or whatever?
No, they're actually back on sale for normal price. You could get them for $15 through Fangamer. So if you need a flip grip.
I don't because I actually bought it back when it was a Kickstarter, so I'm still good. But that's great to know. I appreciate the creator. I actually follow him on Twitter. He's a very cool guy. And definitely deserves all your money. But that's getting away from Mecha-Ritz. So, yeah, Mecha-Ritz Steel Rondo is the tale of a 12-year-old scientist girl who invents mecha, whatever that means. I guess it just means machines. And they wipe out humanity with their infinite bullets. And then one of the mecha accidentally develops a human brain. The game describes it that it was a mecha that contained a human body and somehow absorbed the mind of it and then decide to rebel against these, you know, basically it's about as much story as you would expect from a shmup. And actually that's pretty darn good. But yeah, you're one lone ship against the mecha, which again can just spray bullets endlessly. And spoiler alert, the final boss is a 12-year-old girl and she does not pull a single punch. This has one of the craziest, like, final boss sequences I've seen in a shooter, especially one that's, like, on the, like, you know, more budgety side like this. I was thoroughly impressed with this game all throughout. It is, the style of it is done very, PlayStation era, but with sprites. You know, you can count the pixels if you really want to. It will fill up the screen so much that you genuinely believe that the system can't take it as much slowdown as there is. However, that's kind of a trick of the trade. You know, it slows down conveniently so that you can actually weave into the small gaps of non-death that occur. And I love games like that. I crave them and I always look for them as the games that eventually just end up with so many bullets on the screen that it's more bullet than screen at that point. This game delivers that and more. You start off being able to choose from a red ship or a blue ship. They have different shot types. This is one of those kind of games where if you tap the A button, it will shoot your regular shot, but if you hold the A button, it will shoot a more concentrated shot, and usually will have like some kind of thing. Like there's a green ship that gets unlocked because there's unlockable ships all throughout this thing. And like the green one, for instance, will unload like this just splat of like really powerful green just goop, essentially, at the enemy, kind of like a bomb, essentially. And it does like a whole lot of damage, but at the cost of like not having as good of a shot for a little while. Yeah, this game pulls out all the tricks as far as that goes. It's not super customizable or anything like that. In fact, I don't even think there's a difficulty toggle. I'm going to check that right quick. However, the interesting thing about that is that once you beat the game, which, again, I have, then when you start it over again, you'll suddenly find that you can select some levels and, you know, as alternate paths throughout the game's story. And if you do, those levels are way more intense than the other ones. But yeah, you can set the difficulty. It's through rank. Okay, so basically, there's a range of 1 to apparently 300.
Oh, it's a dynamic rank system that self-adjusts to ease in new players or challenge veterans.
That's right. Okay, yes. That's pretty and cool. I'm at 208 right now.
Jeez.
Yeah, which is beyond hard. Yeah.
Another feature, deep, satisfying combat with 15 handcrafted stages and 40 unique bosses. Unique.
Yeah. This game really throws the bosses at you. Like I said, the final battle is essentially a boss rush, but with a difference. And I really appreciated it. I was like, holy geez, this is amazing. But yeah, it has the scaling difficulty. That's what I was going to say. It has that through the option system. Again, you can start it on a higher difficulty if you want, or like the new stages that kind of crop up are way more intense, which is great. I can't find anything to complain about with this game. Honestly, they pretty much hit the nail on the head in terms of like this being, the kind of shooter that it is. I don't think that it has... Oh, I just unlocked a new ship. I've got 5 of the 7 ships now.
Nice.
There's a purple one. Ooh, it looks really cool, too. Poiple. Yeah. Poiple. Oh, and yeah, there's my initial rank down there and stuff, too. Yeah. Well, I guess I was just saying that there's not, like... You can't just say easy, hard, medium, whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't think there's a multiplayer in it either, but whatever.
Yeah, well, it's $15. What are your thoughts?
Oh, this is an easy buy. It's so easy. Like, if I wasn't reviewing this one, I would hope that I would see it and actually purchase it, because, I mean, it's a little hard to tell that it's a shooter from the cover, because it's just the girl sitting on the end of a giant teacup sipping some tea. A lot of the bosses are very much like if they were named by a 12-year-old, who really enjoys coffee and tea and desserts. Like, all the bosses are named after like coffees and teas and desserts and stuff. It's pretty great. There's a lot of charm to the game, and it's all absurd, either through translation or through, you know, just intention. But yeah, no, this is a buy it. Shmup fans, def get on this one, because it is fun, fun, fun.
Cool. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Garbage Pail Kids Mad Mike and the Quest for Stale Gum, developed by Retrotainment Games and Digital Eclipse, published by IM 8-Bit, released October 25th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $9.99. Garbage Pail Kids, bleh, bleh, I can't talk. Garbage Pail Kids are back in this long-lost, all-new platforming adventure featuring 4 playable characters, 6 secret-filled levels, and a trading card system. Garbage Pail Kids Mad Mike and the Quest for Stale Gum is a throwback to the golden era of 80s gaming. Ernell, you're probably the biggest Garbage Pail Kids fan I know that isn't me, because I collected them like crazy when I was a kid, and you still do.
That's right. I still do. Still got them all sitting around in my binders, and I keep getting new boxes every single year.
Nice.
Because they're fantastic cars that unfortunately are milked to death by Tops. But I digress, because even if the industry itself has changed, the love of my love of the cards themselves have not. And so this game was a perfect fit for me to try. One, because I like garbage Pokés, and two, because to be perfectly blunt, I wasn't particularly confident in the game being fun, because I was, this is the garbage pail kit lover in me talking, but when I saw the first images of it, my first thought was like, this really should have been a 16-bit game, because I want them to be more detailed on the screen. I want to be able to like, yep, that's totally Beaky Becky right there. That's totally Luke Puke vomiting all over the place for extra damage. I'm sold, you know, but instead they didn't 8-bit, and I get it. That's the thing. So I'm giving it a fair critique. And to be perfectly honest, I shouldn't even have to make that statement, because I actually ended up liking the game. The idea behind it, which actually before even that, I should say this. The game is a sequel to an interesting movie that they did called Mad Mike and Fury Load, which was like an interesting animation movie. Like Funko Pop animation of sorts, that kind of plays on like Mad Max Fury Road, involving the Garbage Pail Kid Apocalypse brought on by Adam Bomb. And it actually had some like freaking interesting like star power. Like it was Christian Slater voiced Mad Max. And yeah, I was shocked. Like, wait, I recognize this voice. It was like that. There was another woman like Tara Reid, who's like really known in like the voice acting world. She did the voice of Leaky Lindsay in the movie. And there were a couple other random, like just like unexpected names that just showed up in the credits. I'm like, wow, that's pretty awesome. But it's like a 10-minute movie they actually put in the game. So you can watch that if you want. And of course I watched it, because I get to watch Garbage Pail Kids animated. Of course I want to watch this shit
in the game.
Yeah, I loved it. And there's also a little trailer, like a fake trailer for like the long lost Garbage Pail Kid game that was lost to time is back. And it's like these people being interviewed, like, we knew the game existed. It was in a bin somewhere. Someone threw it away, but we found it. And it was like this really fun little commercial. But okay, enough about all that. Let me talk about the actual game now. So again, this takes place during the garbage apocalypse or whatever. Mad Mike is pretty much kind of lamenting the loss of his stale gum. He ate his last stick of stale gum. He goes to Brainy Janie to get another piece, and apparently there is no more stale gum. But she has come up with a way to create stale gum by combining 6 special ingredients that are found throughout time in space. So in order to acquire his stale gum, he and 3 other Garbage Pail Kids, Leaky Lindsay, Luke Puke, and Muggin' Megan, have to travel between 6 different time periods and 6 different locations, rather, to acquire the ingredients to the stale gum, such as, you know, eyeball fluid from Spacey Stacy, or like some bone marrow from Pharaoh Fossil. So the gameplay itself is a 2D platformer. You enter the environments and you pretty much run, jump, and you can utilize the special ability of each respective Garbage Pail Kid. Mad Mike has a melee attack that does the most damage of the 4 kids. Luke Puke can vomit at an arc, so it's like kind of like an arcing angled attack. Leaky Lindsay shoots snot, so that's the projectile attack. And Muggin' Megan can jump really high because she's putty, and she can also do a stomp. So you can switch between them at will. They each have their own hit points, and when it runs out of hit points, that kid gets KO'd and you switch to another one, a la the Ninja Turtles on the NES. As you're exploring the levels, you'll come across different Garbage Pail Kids that will have general small conversations, like flavor text conversations with you. And they'll also trade Garbage Pail Kids with you. Why would you trade Garbage Pail Kid cards with Garbage Pail Kids? Well, most of the Garbage Pail Kids are just like cards you can collect, and they have different values which are used in the trades. However, there are a specific subset of them that are power cards, and they give you special abilities when you use them. Like Buggy Betty gives you the ability to fly. Brainy Brian allows you to resurrect a KO'd kid. And Adam Bomb just explodes the screen and does damage to everyone on it. Those are just some examples. And each card has a trade value. So let's say, for example, you want to trade for Live Mike, who his ability is he stuns enemies on the screen. He's valued at 7. So in order to get Live Mike from another Garbage Pail Kid, if they're trading it, you have to provide, you know, equal value or greater Garbage Pail Kid cards. So Alien Landon for 3, and like Luke Puke for 3, and then Upchuck for 1. And that counts as 7. You can make the trade and get the card you want and do that. It's kind of funny how that, despite the fact that, like I said, most of the cards don't do anything, true to life with me, I just want to have one of every card in the game. So if I only have one of a card that does nothing but use for trade fodder, I still won't give it up because I need my Greaser Greg. You can't have it until I get a second one. That's just how it works.
How many cards are in the game?
39 different cards. Nice. And it's interesting because they could have easily just been like, we're only including Garbage Pail Kids from like the quote-unquote Golden Age series 1 through 15, but they actually opted to bring in some of the newer ones too, like Joyrider, who was actually from We Hate the 90s, which came out in 2019. And Alien Landon was also one of the later ones that came out. And I actually recognize all but Joyrider. I had to look Joyrider up, but I recognize all. It was like, oh yeah, no, I have Alien Landon upstairs. I have this card upstairs because I have every Garbage Pail Kid. I have damn near every Garbage Pail Kid except for when they started getting chase mode and like trying to take me for like hundreds of dollars to get one fucking card. But before that, I had pretty much every one of them, and I still have a ton upstairs and in this house. Fun fact for listeners, I actually just sold a Garbage Pail Kid a couple weeks ago for $500.
Holy shit.
Yeah, some of them can sell for a mint if you know which ones to sell. But yeah, it's
crazy. Which one did you sell?
It was a Garbage Pail Kid from the... It wasn't American as Apple Pie. Actually, I think it was. It was a Michael Jordan card where it's Michael Jordan in the jersey, but he's dunking a basketball with his tongue. And apparently, that card is worth a lot of money.
Damn.
But... it's interesting how that whole thing works. But so the game itself, though, you're exploring each of these different levels, and as you're running around, the enemies on the levels themselves are different Garbage Pail Kids, like Haley's Vomit and Cactus Carol and Buggy Betty. As you know, Buggy Betty's your friend. But Beaky Becky, Smelly Sally's a friend in this game, too. Weird Wendy's a freaking weird hopping monster. I could name a bunch of Garbage Pail Kids. The point is, there's a bunch of Garbage Pail Kids that are enemies.
You know your Garbage Pail Kids.
I will say, though, showing off.
I am.
I'm going to say, though, like, not knowing anything about the Garbage Pail Kids myself, I'm just enjoying the language. Just like I'm enjoying just listening to this. This is great.
And that's part of what makes the game fun to me, too. Like, even though, like I said earlier, I really want this to be 16-bit because I want more detail to the characters and all that, I still can see a Garbage Pail Kid like Green Dean do his attack, and I'm like, that's Green Dean! They put Green Dean in the game! That's great! I'm a 42-year-old man sitting here going, oh boy, there's a Green Dean. it unlocks a bit of a happiness streak in me. And again, the game is actively fun to play. I like exploring the levels looking for trash cans because when you break a trash can, you get access to a new trading card. You get one hit point back. And also, you get one of the letters that spells trash. And if you spell the entirety of trash, you can push A and B at the same time and get a moment of invincibility. So you don't want to spam or hoard them either, because if you spell trash and you get another piece of garbage, it just goes to waste. Also, each level has a secret porta potty, where if you find the porta potty, you can fish the toilet for a hidden item, an extra item, whether it be a card or one more piece of garbage to spell towards trash. And at the end of every level, there's a garbage pail boss. That's a fun thing to say. There's a garbage pail boss that you have to fight. And if you defeat them, you get one of the ingredients that goes towards the stale gum. So I got to say, if you couldn't tell by how stupid I sounded gushing over this thing, I had a lot of fun playing this game. It's very 8-bit simple, though, so don't come here looking for a deep, elaborate game. It is a freaking 8-bit game that's hop and bop platform action. But yeah,
it's the 80s with Garbage Pail Kid. I don't know why you want a 16-bit game. They weren't as popular in the 90s.
That doesn't matter. I want detailed Garbage Pail Kids. I want 16-bit Garbage Pail Kids sprites. It's that simple. I just want more detailed sprites. So if you're listening to this, I think Adam Goldberg had a part in this. If you're listening to this and your funding is still because your TV show is still on the air, because for those who don't know, Adam Goldberg is a huge Garbage Pail Kids fan. Fund another game, make a 16-bit, call it the quest for you know, better sprites or something. I don't know. Maybe they're seeking out the extra cards from the missing 16th series.
Search for more money.
Yes, pretty much. But they can even make a fun episode where like, they're searching for the missing 16th series cards, because though they did eventually sparse them out across the other series, there was an unreleased Garbage Pail Kids series back then, and it would have likely come out in 1990. So there you go. That's the connection. But yeah, all in all, if you liked Garbage Pail Kids back in the day, that also means you were around during the NES era, which means you shouldn't particularly be partial to retro graphics and retro gameplay. And if you have that nostalgia for these games, I think this is a lot of fun in that regard. It's already a fun game in its own right, but if you have the Garbage Pail Kid nostalgia going with it, this game is a blast. It feels good to play, and it actually, again, it makes me smile. I'm happy to see Garbage Pail Kids pop up in the game. Cool. It's good.
Sounds good. All right. We are through this episode. We done made it.
I don't know if you didn't even have to ask me about what you should do. It's like, just buy it.
To think, well, I could have had a fifth game today.
Yeah, do you want to talk about another one? It's only been 2.5 hours. Should we should we go longer, folks?
No.
Music this episode. What should we play? Should we play more 1-Ups because of the whole 20th anniversary thing?
Yes, 20 episodes of 1-Ups. I'm saying, let's do it.
All right, so this is episode number 3 out of 20 of the 1-Ups. Anyone have a choice of 1-Up song?
I was just thinking, and I want to say it's in volume 1, so like old school. Let me check it, but I really liked VCR's kind of solo take on the Zelda 2 town theme. Let me see, that is track 11 on volume 1.
Jazzy. All right, we'll do that. So anyone have any final words before the song?
Just with it. It's fun.
You cut out through like the first half of that.
Those are the final words. You cut out halfway through that.
Good. We're done.